Well, hello and welcome to another live edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine show. I'm Michael Hoag, your host. Glad to have you with us on this dreary Monday. It's nice inside, of course, as you listen to the Arts Magazine show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station, right here in Kansas City. Heard here on 90.1 FM on the internet at kkfi.org, literally around the world at kkfi.org. In future podcasts that will be on the station, you can hear it again. And if you're standing down on the corner of 39th and Main, we have a speaker out there. You can hear us right now down on the streets, taking it to the streets here on KKFI. I have a great show planned today. I think you'll really enjoy it. Nice contrast of things going on. In the first half hour of the show, Kansas City Baroque will be with us. They're going to tell us about the concert they have coming up this Friday, May the 20th at 12:10 p.m. It's part of the Westport Center for the Arts Brown Bag Concert Series. Here to tell us all about it, and musicians as well. Lyra Farrago is with us. She is the director of the Westport Center for the Arts series. She brought along with her Trilla Ray Carter. Trilla is a cellist, one of the founding directors of the Baroque Consortium, you said, I should say?
Yes.
I should say Consortium. Welcome for that. Two of the musicians are with us as well. They're going to talk some too. Rob Patterson, violinist, also a founding member. And Monty Carter, a founding member and musician as well. All welcome to the show. Everyone will get a chance to speak. Let's start first with Lyra. Right?
Yes, good morning.
You are the director
good afternoon.
Of the Westport Center
yes.
for the Arts. They call it the Brown Bag Concert Series because it's always around noontime, like during the lunch hour.
Right. That's the way it was conceived, for people to just casually come in and eat their lunch. And originally in 94 when it started, Marion Thomas, she wanted to invite, they have a children's daycare close by, so she invited them in as well.
Yeah, it was at the Westport Presbyterian Church, and a few years ago they suffered a tremendous fire down there.
Right, back in 2011.
Yeah, uh-huh. But they are back now. Are you the first event back in the church?
Yes, this Friday will be the first time that we're back into the newly built church. I've heard there'll be lots of still, you know, things lying around, but the workers will stop when it is time for Trilla and for them to do their program at 12:10. So everything will stop and we'll get to enjoy live Baroque music.
And I questioned it earlier, but it is 12:10.
Correct.
So if you go to lunch at noon, you have 10 minutes.
You can run over. Yep. Yep.
And then you'll finish and get back to lunch. So it's not a long concert then.
No, it's usually between 50 minutes to an hour. Sometimes people will go over a little bit and people can come and go as they please.
You have a nice variety of things usually, but often in the classical vein.
Right. That's right. And this one on Friday will be our last one for the end of the 22nd season, and I have got our musicians lined up for our 23rd season. So there'll be mostly a lot of classical, but some folk music, and looking forward to
it. If you want to check out their website, everyone has a website, and they do as well. Westport Center for the Arts. So it's WCAKC.org.
That's it.
Get a listing of, if you want to learn more about the concert on Friday. And I don't know, do you have next season posted up there? We'll talk about that in a bit. But
I'm not sure if it's posted yet.
Okay, but it will be soon.
Yes, will be soon.
So you could spend an hour during lunch and bring a brown bag lunch.
Yes.
Do a lot of people actually bring back brown bags?
Well, no, and we do provide a reception. So we have cookies and coffee. So I would say not as much, but yeah. Some people do.
Well, that's a nice thing.
Yeah,
to
yeah,
do.
Absolutely.
That's why it's been so successful since 94, you said?
Yeah, so just finishing our 22nd season. Yeah.
Trilla Ray Carter is with us. She is the director of the Baroque Consortium?
Yes, yeah. Kansas City Baroque Consortium. We started in 2009 and gathered together some other friends of mine who are very interested in exploring what we call period music or historically informed performance practice. Those are all very fancy words for saying we're playing Baroque music on instruments as they would have been in the time of the Baroque period. So lots of changes happened after the Baroque period as we moved into the classical period with Mozart and Haydn and on into the Romantic period and even into the 20th century. Lots of changes were made to the instruments. So what we've done is we've taken away all those changes and gone back to the instruments as they most likely were in the 1600s. So our strings are not steel strings as they are today, but they're made out of gut, and these are ram gut or sheep gut, not cat gut, so your cats can rest easy. We're not coming after them. Our bows are shaped differently. So the modern bow, as developed by Tort, in the late classical, early romantic period, are concave, but these are the opposite. So these are bowed out like a bow and arrow. This is how they originally were made. So this change is actually how the bow creates sound on the string, plus adding the sound of the gut string, which is quite warmer, much more delicate, much more sensitive to the touch of the bow to the string. So what we've discovered, and it's been, I think, the most amazing part of this journey, is to discover how much more expressive you can actually be on gut strings with a Baroque bow. Even though we've given up lots of the other modern accoutrements, like the shoulder pad hadn't been invented yet, the shoulder rest, or the chin rest, and the shoulder pad were all yet to be discovered. The end pin on the cello was added later. What other things? The bridge and the shape of the fingerboard were different. Those are some more details that when you come on Friday, come up after the concert, and we'll tell you all the details that you could possibly want to know about.
I want to see that goat gut. You said something very interesting before the show, to be serious for a moment. You said you wanted to come in here a few minutes early, so your strings could adjust to the temperature?
Yes. The gut strings are very, very sensitive because they're literally raw material. They are literally gut from the sheep or the ram. So as we move from room to room and the temperature and humidity change, it affects our instruments and our strings immediately. So we'll probably even tune very briefly right before we play, just because they've probably adjusted in the 10 minutes that we've been sitting here in the studio. So,
well, tell me about the pieces you're going to be performing.
We're really excited. The piece that we've chosen to play today is by Niccolò Matisse, and he was an Italian Baroque composer, and he wrote A Ground after the Scotch humor. So it's kind of a strange name. The Ground refers to the fact that it's the bass line is the same. So it continually repeats. I never play a second note. It's a little bit like the Pachelbel canon, but slightly more interesting, maybe. Well, I don't know. It's a tie. A lot of people love the Pachelbel canon, and I do too, but I sure have heard it a lot. You probably haven't heard the Scotch humor very often. The upper two violin parts then go on a whole series of variations on this Scotch humor, which was a famous little tune of the period. So that's the first selection we'd like to offer for you today.
Okay, with Robin and Monty on violin and lira as well. A sample of what you might hear this Friday. Bravo. That's great. Yeah. Kansas City Baroque, a sample of what you'll hear if you attend their concert on this Friday, May 20th at 12:10 p.m. at the Westport Presbyterian Church. Kind of a tradition, I guess. Now, how often do you have your brown bag concerts?
They run for 9 months from September through May. They are the third Friday afternoon of each month.
Do you try to get a nice mix, like today Baroque and other times it's something else?
Yes. Like a sampling, like next year,
sure.
I sort of have the program in front of me.
The 23rd season, folks. It's not even on the website yet. An exclusive.
Da-da-da. Where's the drum roll?
That's a Michael exclusive.
Well, we get to start with the Lyric Arts Trio, which is Sarah Anderson Tannehill and Elena Lance Talley and Dan Velliser. So they're going to open up our 23rd season on September 16th. And then in October, we have a folk duo. They're called the Shortleaf Band. And November, we have Jan Craybill is going to play the organ. So she'll premiere the organ that Marion has sent me several emails about the progress on how the organ is coming. And they're going to start installing that at the church in June. So just this coming month, they'll
That's
be installed.
That's a very long process, isn't it?
It is. It is.
It takes a long time to bring everything in, set it up, tune it. It's a very long process to install.
Will the organ have a permanent home at the Westport
yes.
Presbyterian?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So they're very excited about that.
Oh, I'll bet they are.
Yeah.
Yeah. They've had such a tragic last few years.
Oh, my gosh.
But they're back open, and you're the first, as I said earlier, the first... The first concert, at least the first brown bag concert.
That's
there.
Right. And I think they've had a couple of services in the new sanctuary in the last 2 weeks or so.
I guess they recently had the memorial for Tom Carlisle there. His wife being the longtime theatrical lady and director, Etta Marie Carlisle.
Oh, yes.
That was down there. But a lot of good things going on in Westport. People don't really think of Westport for a concert during the day. When they think of Westport, they think of music going far into the night, like 2 a.m.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah,
if you're still up from the night before, just stop in
that's
anyway.
Right.
That's right. That would be perfect.
Now, the number you played was lively yet very soothing.
Thank you.
At the same time.
Yeah.
You know, how does the composer get that effect?
Have you done any
composing yourself?
I've done a little tiny bit of composing, but in a quite different style. My husband also does composing as well. I think there was a language of the Baroque period. We talk about sort of the rhetoric of the period. There's actually a sense of rhetoric or a sense of speaking that gets translated into the music in every era. And so in the Baroque period, there was such a strong emphasis on this concept of rhetoric. So using rhetoric to convince your audience of your idea. So in music, and we see it in art as well, there's a tremendous focus on creating effect. And we often refer to this even in music as affect. What is the affect that the composer is looking for? So there's a real consciousness, and of course, music was just developing into this new language of harmony and rhythm, and things were really just starting to come together for the first time from the medieval and Renaissance period. So there was this explosion of how do we use these musical notes and the concept of rhythm and harmony to really express things in a really big way. Now, the last piece we did was pretty lighthearted. It's based on a Scotch air, and it's kind of a little dance thing, so it's nice and light. If there's a little time, we'll do a little piece by Tartini, which has a very different affect, a very different feel, very lovely.
Now, do you want to do that right at the bottom of the hour, or do you want to do that now, or what would you like to do?
Let's do it now.
You're the guest.
Let's do it now.
Let's do it now.
So this is a little Tartini sonata, just the first movement. This gives you a great example of how different the colors and the language and the writing was. Even though we think of the Baroque music as all kind of sounding alike, it was an incredibly wide range of writing styles that were going on, even within this newly emerging language. So Tartini really captures, I think, a sweetness and a joyfulness and a melodic quality that is just, we fell in love with this piece as soon as we read through it. It was like, let's put this on the program as well. So Tartini is also Italian by chance. 1692 to 1770 were his dates, and he was born in the Istrian Peninsula, which at the time was under Venetian rule. So he's still Italian, even though that's now part of what was formerly the Yugoslavia.
Sure.
Monty
sure.
has something to say.
Uh-huh. This is Monty. We're on KKFI. This is something to check off the bucket list. I'm totally serious here.
Well, thank you.
I am totally serious here.
Monty Carter.
I just wanted to speak to the diversity of music, and it's true of all the arts, of course. But, you know, I think all classical musicians at one point or another, when we've told a friend or a new acquaintance what we do, sometimes they think they're giving us a great compliment when they go, oh, classical music. Oh, well, I'd like to put that on at night. It helps me go right to sleep. I like to tell them, I didn't go into this for its narcoleptic effects.
That's right.
Classical music and music of the Baroque era is not a style of music. It's a galaxy of styles. So it's a blast.
That was Monty Carter. Now, does Rob want to talk as well? Not yet?
I talk.
Okay, he talks. He speaks. Okay, so we have Triller Ray Carter, Rob Patterson, and Monty Carter. Beautiful. Just beautiful. Kansas City Baroque, part of the concert they'll be having again this Friday at 12:10 p.m. I know that's an odd time, but they want people to, if you get off for lunch at noon and you're close by, you can walk down there, ride down there, and you'll be there in time to start and probably get back to lunch right afterwards as well.
Right.
How many numbers will you play altogether?
It'll be just the three of us. So we're doing a program called Pasticcio, which is, if you know what French pastiche or a smorgasbord, it's just a little taste to go along with the lunchtime hour, to whet your taste to a variety of Baroque selections.
A program of Baroque delicacies, it says. That sounds just delicious. And this is something that the Westport Center for the Arts has done for some time and will be doing off into the future.
Yes, we will. And if I can just plug the website one more time, if people are driving around and can't write it down, if you remember, westportcenterforthearts.kc.org, so it's WCAKC.org, you can get on there and see all of the programs that they do. The mission for Westport Center for the Arts is to provide high-quality arts programs for the community at affordable prices. So it's just an exciting organization to be part of. So
when I first started doing interviews with the center, I thought, you know, a lot of people don't know that that happens. A free concert on a Friday around the noon hour. It's an unusual time to have a concert, but I assume it works pretty well for you.
Yeah, we always have a nice audience, and people bring in their own audiences sometimes.
You do a program with kids as well. I made a note for that. Do you want to speak briefly on that?
Well, it's Kids Team Up for Art, and there's that, and then there's a theater program and a visual arts program. So there's different people on committees for all of those.
You do, like, around Christmas time, you do an interesting one. I forget what it was called now. But I remember at the time, it had to do with Christmas. It was a Christmas themed type song. Was it done in the vein of a radio broadcast? Maybe.
I think you're right.
I think so too. Yeah, but everybody in radio likes to. Well, if you're in radio, you like to make fun of radio.
Right. Exactly.
How long have each of you been playing? I assume all four of you, really, although three are musicians. But you play as well.
Yes, I'm a musician. Yeah.
Tara is a wonderful flutist.
My job for this is the director of these brown bags, so I get to invite my friends to be on the series.
When did you first start taking music lessons?
Fifth grade band. Fifth grade.
Yeah, that's probably late, probably.
Well, I studied piano. Yeah. I started piano third grade, like third through eighth grade. I played piano, and then I played flute, and I studied voice when I got out of graduate school, so I do a little bit of everything.
Sure. What about Trilla? Started early?
I did start. I started piano in second grade. I grew up in Joplin, and amazingly, they started string students in fourth grade so that by fifth grade we could create an orchestra. So I actually had an orchestra with brass and woodwinds and percussion and strings in fifth grade, which is highly unusual today. So I started cello in fifth grade. I had a big family, and the cellos were free. So the teacher said, you play piano, so you know bass clef, and I can give you an instrument, and your parents don't have to rent it. So I became a cellist.
Wow. Yeah.
Very grateful, actually.
What about Rob? You have to talk now.
Yeah, I went to a youth concert for the St. Louis Symphony in fourth grade and came back from that and asked my mother if she would buy me a violin. And she said, I'll rent one. Not going to buy one yet. And that's how I started, just in public schools in St. Louis. I took piano as well. And actually, early in school, started on saxophone. But then that's kind of when I realized that I was asthmatic and that wasn't working out so well. So stuck with the string instruments.
Yeah. Well, those sax players have a reputation. You know.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of why I started playing it.
And what about Monty? Monty is the husband of Trilla.
I started in fifth grade as well. The cello was the biggest instrument, so I wanted to play that. But my mom refused to cart it to school every day, and I don't blame her a bit. But I happened to have a crush on my teacher, Miss Blaylock, who later that year broke my heart by becoming Mrs. Cooley.
Oh.
But at the time, she said, "Well, Monty, I don't have anyone playing viola. Would you like to play viola?" And I looked up at her and said, "Yeah." The rest is history.
Oh, in our grade school, the tallest girl in school played the cello. And it was, she would put it between her two legs because that's the only way you could do it.
Yeah.
I'll always remember that. I'll always remember that. Well, the concert, the Kansas City Baroque Concert, part of the Brown Bag Concert Series for the Westport Center of the Arts, will happen this Friday, May 20th at 12:10 p.m. at the Westport Presbyterian Church, rebuilt from the fire. Back in production again. It's a program of Baroque delicacies. It will be going on during the lunch hour, so you can lunch, bring your brown bag, or you can buy from any of the KKFI underwriters in Westport something to bring over. But they'll also have a refreshments
cookies and coffee. Yep,
cookies and coffee.
Come
going
on
Friday at 12:10 p.m. It cooks out. It kicks off. I know that's an unusual time, but think about it in terms of your lunch break.
That's right.
And that'll work just fine for you. Thanks so much, all of you, for being here.
Thank
Trilla
you.
Trilla Ray Carter.
Thanks for having us.
Cellist, founder, well, wait, cellist, founder of the series, as well as Rob Patterson, violinist, one of the founders, Monty Carter, a founder, musician as well, and Lila Farrago, who is also a musician herself. She plays the flute, a soprano, choral director, but is here in the in the capacity of being the director of the Westport Center for the Arts.
Thank
series.
You for inviting
Thanks so
us.
Much for coming.
Thank
Thanks
you.
For playing a couple of numbers for us. This is an example of what you'll hear as you enjoy your delicacies
right.
on Friday afternoon at noon.
Thank you. We'll look forward to seeing you.
That's right. 12:10 p.m. Thanks so much for coming. We're going to take a break. When we return, when you were in grade school, you my grade school did, went over to the Kansas City Museum up at Corinthian Hall. Haven't heard a lot about it in recent years. I'm going to find out today as Anna Marie Tutera is with us to tell us all about it when we return. You're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI. 90.1 FM. And welcome back to the Arts Magazine show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. Our day of adventure continues now. Do you remember in grade school, at least my grade school did, every year we had probably two, maybe more outings to the Kansas City Museum. That's the ornate-looking building up in the northeast area of Kansas City. I have some friends that live up in that area now, and yeah, it's been there for a long time. I haven't heard a lot about it in recent years. The Long family, I guess. It was their in-town mansion, and I guess Longview Farm down south was their summer home where they had their horses and things like that. Well, that's a little bit of background. I will let Anna Marie Tutera, the executive director of the Kansas City Museum, tell a little more about that. Thanks for coming to the show, Anna Marie.
Absolutely. It's always fun to talk about the Kansas City Museum.
I remember going on those outings and how much fun we had. There was a big bear. I mean, this is really a huge bear. Bigger than in the movie, with the DiCaprio movie, I think.
You know, we hear this all the time. We get visitors that come to the museum now for tours. And visitors who remember coming to the Kansas City Museum on school field trips, and we always get the same questions. Do you still have the bear? Do you still have the igloo? Do you still have the planetarium? So it was a museum that really stuck in people's memories.
Oh, sure.
And for which they feel very nostalgic.
It was a great building to go to. They always explained that this used to be some rich person's home.
Right.
Didn't understand the historical significance then. I do now. But I guess, did the Long family donate the home to the museum?
The Long family built the entire property in 1910. Mrs. Long died in 1928, and Mr. Long died in 1934. That very same year that he died, the two daughters had a major auction and sold much of the furniture, furnishings in Corinthian Hall. Several years later, the daughters essentially donated the property to, at the time, what was called the Kansas City Museum Association. And that was the entity that created the Kansas City Museum as a public cultural organization that opened in 1940.
Yeah, it's been there a long time.
75 years of collecting.
Kind of dropped out of the news for a while. I'm not sure why, and we don't need to go into that. But you're on the way back.
We are completely on the way back. And that really started in May 2014 when Parks and Recreation took over the operation and management of the museum. A lot of people don't realize that the Kansas City Museum has actually been owned by the city of Kansas City, Missouri since 1948. And then it was managed and operated by Union Station for a period of time. And since May 2014, with Parks and Recreation taking a leadership role in the management and operation of the museum, we have really been in a very new direction for getting the museum fully designed for upcoming renovation. So we've been working really hard over the past 2 years.
The upper floors more? Cause it always seems such a solid building. I would doubt right. that we need too much, at least not exterior, probably interior renovation.
Well, from about 2005 to 2011, a lot of exterior renovation was done on the mansion. So the mansion is very solid. But remember, there are several buildings on the property. There's the mansion, there's the carriage house, there's the conservatory, a gardening tool shed, what we call the gatehouse, which serves as the administrative offices for the museum staff, but was originally the horse trainer's home on the property. So all of these buildings need to be restored. Interior restoration and rehabilitation. And that's what we've been working on for the past year with our primary architects, International Architects Atelier. We've been essentially working on a design master plan for the entire property, including the grounds, because the buildings sit on about 3 acres. Mm-hmm. So it's really a space planning report that gives us information about how each of those buildings will be used.
It's a nice building. It's got a gate all the way around it and all that. Just as you would have pictured, just the picture I have in my head from old days.
Absolutely.
It's just that way. And that it was then. It looks like history has not passed there.
Right.
Perhaps.
Right. It's an absolutely exquisite property and very important historically to Kansas City.
Yeah. I remember, success always happens when you get a lot of people involved. And you've, as I understand it, you've done some creative partnering
yes.
with other organizations yes. to help you, you know, get back up to this point.
Yes. Well, it's really important. We, in addition to doing all of the design master planning, we've also been working on a revision of our strategic plan. We've also been working on a business plan. And so as we think about the new mission and the vision for the museum, it really is about celebrating Kansas City's history, its cultural heritage, its pride. It's really about celebrating Kansas City, the evolution and the spirit of the residents and the communities of Kansas City, telling untold stories about the history of Kansas City. And so for us to be successful as a history museum in doing that, we have to partner mm-hmm. with individuals and organizations. And we've been doing a lot of that over the past 2 years to develop programs and exhibitions and events. We see ourselves as a very participatory environment where we are engaging individuals and organizations in the development of what we're doing and being able to really showcase Kansas City. And I think that's what the best history museums do. They fully showcase the city.
Yeah, I remember one of the last times I went up there, on certain days of the week, they were offering films. And one of the films was The History of Nellie Don.
Yes.
Or do you still offer films on certain days?
We don't do that currently because we've retired that conservatory building as we move through design development, but we have, or I should say Parks and Recreation, has taken over the operation and management of the Historic Garment District Museum. So that museum is at 8th and Broadway, and it was founded in 2002 by Harvey Freed and Ann Brownfield. And when Parks and Recreation took over the Kansas City Museum, Ann and Harvey wanted to retire and asked that Parks and Rec consider taking over the Historic Garment District Museum as well. And so we have that entire beautiful collection of historical Kansas City-made garments and accessories has been acquired by the Kansas City Museum and is residing in our overall collection, because we have a stellar collection of clothing, textiles, and costumes, one of the best in the region. So it really made sense for us to take over that space.
People don't think in terms of Kansas City as a garment center, but it was.
It completely was. And we like to think that we are doing our part on 8th and Broadway in kind of reactivating the garment district and to inspire fashion designers and others to come back to the garment district in some way and experience it, and especially through the exhibitions that we're putting on at the Historic Garment District Museum.
Let's touch on what's going on up at Corinthian Hall.
Sure.
Oh, and I suppose I should ask people, one person asked me late last week, why did they call it Corinthian Hall?
Because of the Corinthian columns. The Kansas City Museum was designed by architect Henry Hoyt. And it was designed in the Beaux-Arts style of architecture, and it has the Corinthian style columns.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what kinds of things are going on now? What kinds of things are coming up that you'd like to tell
yes,
the people about?
We definitely like to brag. Huh. Well, I'll tell you what happened most recently. We held our first annual Derby party on May 7th
Kentucky
grounds.
Derby. Oh, because they raised horses.
You got it. So we celebrated the legacy of Lula Long Combs, and that was fantastic. We had nearly 400 people at the Kansas City Museum, many of whom had never even been there before. So it was a really fun way to honor the history of the museum and also attract a new audience to learn about what we're doing.
Sure.
Last week, we opened an exhibition at the Historic Garment District Museum called Fashioning Kansas City Icons, The Art and Inspiration of Heidi Herman, Steve Gibson, and Amina Marie Hood. We are showcasing a beautiful collection of Kansas City-made garments by Heidi Herman, wherein she has chosen 10 Kansas City icons and landmarks. Steve Gibson has taken photographs of those icons and landmarks and printed them on these beautiful dresses. And then Amina Marie Hood has made these beautiful hats to accompany each of the dresses.
Yeah.
So it's a really great exhibition that's there that's open through the middle of July.
So they can see it now. Let's get them caught up. What
Absolutely.
Days of the week could they go to see that?
The Historic Garment District Museum is open on Saturdays only from 10 o'clock a.m. to 4 o'clock p.m. and also open by appointment Wednesday through Friday.
Okay.
The Kansas City Museum in the Historic Northeast is open Wednesday through Saturday from 10 to 4. And currently at the Kansas City Museum, we have an exhibition called Pueblo to Pueblo, The Legacy of Southwest Indian Pottery.
Oh, yes.
Beautiful, beautiful exhibition with materials from our Dyer Indian collection. And many people have not seen artifacts from that collection for many, many years. So it's been a treat for people to come and see these beautiful ceramic pieces.
Is it a visiting exhibit? Does it belong to the Kansas City Museum?
It belongs to the Kansas City Museum. And in fact, the Kansas City Museum created it as a traveling exhibition. And it traveled to 9 other venues before it actually was shown in Kansas City. So we're really proud about that. We also are opening a new exhibition at Union Station this coming weekend to complement Union Station's exhibition called Body Worlds
and the Cycle of Life.
Mm-hmm. So about 6 to 8 months ago, the Kansas City Museum acquired the medical collection of St. Joseph's Medical Center. That's about 15,000 objects.
Wow.
Beautiful collection that has medical instruments and equipment dating back to the early 1800s. Mm-hmm. So we've created an exhibition, kind of an intro exhibition into Body Worlds that focuses on that medical collection and the history of it, because it has a really rich history.
Oh, yeah. When people think in terms of seeing things, that may not be something they think of first.
Right.
But the interest of things were more remote in mm-hmm. those days medically.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And the instruments were as well.
Exactly. So it's it'll be there for the duration of the Body Worlds exhibit. And in addition to the exhibits that we do, we put on a robust schedule of public programs and events. We're doing a very interesting program this week on Thursday, May 19th, with the National World War I Museum and Memorial and Birdie's Lingerie. It's called Operation Undress.
Oh.
And it's on the history of lingerie and how the war changed essentially the silhouette of the woman. And I'm not going to tell you too much about it because I want people to come on Thursday, because it is going to be a really fun treat. There are going to be historical garments from the museum's collection on display. They're going to be live models and a panel discussion with myself and Matt Naylor, president and CEO of the National World War I Museum and Memorial, and Peregrine Honig, she's fantastic.
Yeah.
And she's worked with us to curate this fantastic experience.
Where is her art gallery now? It was in the West Bottoms, but it has moved.
I don't know. Mm-hmm. I know that she has Birdie's Lingerie, uh-huh. but I don't know where her gallery is.
Yeah, she had one in the West Bottoms for a while, and it was quite eclectic down there. Yeah. But I understand she's moved up ever since she was on that reality television show where she finished second, and many people think she should have finished first.
Well, she's extraordinarily talented and such a joy to work with. So much fun to collaborate because her creative mind is just extraordinary.
Well, I congratulate you on the collaborations. You're with the World War I Museum,
yes.
and you're just doing things all over. This is the way, I think, to be successful. Instead of all of these organizations being competitors, work together. Things together.
Yes, I completely agree. And I think about it a lot from the funder's perspective. I think about, if I was a funder in Kansas City, I would want to see all of the organizations collaborate as much as possible. At the end of the day, each of our organizations is producing experience for Kansas City, for the residents who live here, for tourists. I mean, that's really what it's all about. It's about engaging our audience, inspiring people, mm-hmm. bringing people into conversation with each other, cooperatively inhabiting a cultural space. And you can't do it alone as an institution. And you shouldn't.
No.
Really.
Really shouldn't.
So we've really prided ourselves on our ability and capacity to partner. And I think that you'll see more and more of that from us as the future museum develops. And we'll have to develop the museum in stages because it is a huge project.
Oh, yeah.
We anticipate beginning construction sometime next year on the first stage. We will focus on the mansion first and getting that renovated. But it will be a multi-year and multi-phased project to build the type of museum that we need to build that works for us functionally too, because we have to build a lot of the form and functionality into the Kansas City Museum property in order to operate successfully as a museum. We need all of that back of the house space, administrative space, mm-hmm. areas for collection storage. All of that has to be built in. Loading dock, shipping and receiving. I mean, it really is a huge endeavor, and it's also very exciting for Kansas City, but it will take us, you know, a good 7 to 10 years to fully realize the good vision that we have right now.
Sure. Walk me through the funder part of it.
Sure.
Do you have an organization? Do you have levels of membership? How does it work with the museum?
Well, we have received a dedicated mill levy for the Kansas City Museum since the late 60s. So we continue to have that funding every year. And that funding we really rely on to operate the museum. We rely on it for capital maintenance, improvement, the planning that we've been doing. We are working actively on a fund development plan because we know that in order to achieve the future museum environment that we are currently designing, it is going to take both public funding and private funding. So we have established a 501c3 nonprofit organization called the Kansas City Museum Foundation. That is getting up and running. That foundation will help us to fundraise for this project. It will help us to ensure the strategic and financial viability of the Kansas City Museum. So that's a really good support mechanism mm-hmm. for us as we embark on what will be a very significant capital campaign.
Sure. We're speaking with Anna Marie Tutera, Executive Director of the Kansas City Museum. People always ask this, so and we talked about it a little earlier, but go through when can people go to visit? What can they see on certain days? Because, you know, a lot of them want to go now.
Absolutely.
What can I see there now?
Yeah. Well, it's important to remember because it can be very startling if you haven't been to the museum since you were a child. It's important to remember that the museum has, for the past 10 years, been in some form of construction and renovation. So when you go to the Kansas City Museum, you are able to see the first floor of the mansion and the first floor of the carriage house at this point in time. You're going to see remaining architectural fabric, and you're going to see spaces that have been demoed and kind of waiting mm-hmm. for the next phase of renovation. Despite all of that, we have exhibitions in the carriage house. We have exhibitions in the mansion at any given time. Right now we have Pueblo to Pueblo. So the museum is open Wednesday through Saturday for tours of Pueblo to Pueblo. And then each day at 2:00, we have a full, what we call, hard hat tour, where we actually take you through the first floor of the mansion and we tell you about the history and legacy of the Long family and the history and legacy of the Kansas City Museum, because its journey as a museum is also quite fascinating.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I always say it's in the Northeast area, but you probably could come up with a better way for them to get there. But it is northeast of downtown.
It is. It's about 10 minutes from downtown. And it's in the historic Northeast, which is also undergoing a tremendous amount of neighborhood revitalization and redevelopment. So it's really perfect timing for the museum to be undergoing such a significant project when the entire historic Northeast is also in its renaissance, I would say.
If you're going to give directions, what are the best streets to take to get the best direct route up there?
Yeah, I like to take Independence Avenue and then take a left on either Gladstone or Benton.
Okay.
And that takes you directly to the Kansas City.
You go past St. John. You go around the island.
And then that's always such a beautiful path because you come around on Gladstone Boulevard, and there it is. And it's pretty unexpected if you haven't seen it before. It's such a beautiful building, and it sits adjacent to Cliff Drive and Kessler Park. So it's really such a beautiful...
Is Cliff Drive still open and available for people to drive there?
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. It underwent some construction, but Cliff Drive is open.
In the longest time, that was the ritzy part of town.
Completely.
One of them.
Yeah. Completely. And it's also, you know, Mr. Long, you know, as his contemporaries did, had many choices of where they could live in Kansas City. And he specifically chose what is now called the historic Northeast. And you have to remember, his property sits on top of a bluff, and it's just beautiful. From there, he could see his skyscraper, the R.A. Long building, the headquarters of the Long Bell Lumber Company. It was near Independence Avenue, Independence Boulevard Christian Church, which he belonged to. And yes, it was a very beautiful and still is neighborhood.
And yes, Longview Farm, I guess, was their place down south where trained the horses.
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. Several years after they completed Corinthian Hall, then they built Longview.
Yeah.
And that's where Lula Long lived with her husband.
Yeah. Interesting history going
on
there.
Very interesting history.
Their website, if you want to check that out, has some information. The times and things like that are probably on the website.
Yes.
KansasCityMuseum.org. That's what I have.
Yes.
That's correct. And the phone number I have, it's a 513 number. That's no one's personal number, is it?
No, it's 816-513-7568.
Okay. I had a different last four digits.
Yeah.
So was it, let me get it right. 7568. That's the number where you can call to make inquiries. So Wednesdays, I guess, through Saturdays.
You got it.
You can go up there to see the Kansas City Museum if you haven't been there since your childhood.
Yeah.
Nice place to see. And I guess, is the bear in storage ready to come out?
The bear is not in storage. However, the buffalo is in storage.
Okay.
Many of those materials were retired as we shifted this focus from natural history.
Why do I remember that and everyone else? Because it was so much fun.
It was.
The Kansas City Museum. And Ritu Tara with us, telling us what's going on at the Kansas City Museum at Corinthian Hall.
Yes.
And they also, I have the Garment District, I guess, downtown. And are you affiliated with the one at Union Station at all?
Union Station and the City of Kansas City, Missouri still jointly own the collection of the museum.
Still own the collection. Okay.
Yes.
Well, that clears that up. Yes. Okay. KansasCityMuseum.org, or you can call 816-513-7568 for more information. Hey, thanks so much
for being
here.
Thank you so much for
getting
having me.
Getting me caught up on some old memories there.
I appreciate it.
The Kansas City Museum at Corinthian Hall. You can go there. They're still under restoration, but you can go there and visit some of the things they have there right now. Thanks for coming.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for filling us in on what's going on.
My pleasure.
The Jazz Insider, Sam Wiseman, is next. He's going to be playing some great jazz for you. KKFI is known for its jazz and blues. We'll have jazz from 1 to 3. We'll have the blues from 3 to 6 right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio. So until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at that cross in the road, I'm Michael Hogue. We'll see you next time.